Today's episode of Point Breakaway is brought to you by Robinhood. With Robinhood, you can invest in stocks, options, and ETFs right from your phone. You can even spend and earn interest on uninvested cash. And with fractional shares, you can buy stocks in any amount, including companies like Apple, Amazon, and Tesla for as little as $1. And that's with no commission fees or account minimums. So whether you're new to investing and ready to learn or just looking for a better experience, stop waiting and join the 10 million Robinhood users. Listeners can get started with a free stock by going to Robinhood.com. That's Robinhood.com. All investments involve risk. This is not an investment advice recommendation or a solicitation of any security. Other fees may apply. Visit rbnhd.com/fees. The free stock program is subject to certain limitations. Annual percentage yield on uninvested cash is paid by program banks and is variable. Robinhood Financial is not a bank. Hello everyone, and welcome to Point Breakaway, the podcast about the Kings, Ducks, and anything else that comes to mind. I am Josh Cooper in Los Angeles, thrilled that Ford vs. Ferrari, nominated for Best Picture in the Oscars, just announced this morning, my favorite movie of 2019. Shane O'Brien, co-host, currently in Orange County, living the good life. Obes, are you as thrilled as I am about Ford vs. Ferrari?
What's up, Coop? I thought it was a great flick. I assumed it would be nominated for Best Picture. It was unbelievable. I enjoyed it. Something I'm definitely going to watch. One of those movies, where, like, once you see it once, you're like, I'm going to definitely watch that again when it comes out on iTunes or whatever. So, no surprise here. They both killed it. Great movie. I'm battling a little bit of a cold here, Coop, so bear with me, but let's get into this, buddy.
You know what? You're not going to get any sympathy from me because I have a child who's, like, you know, the human outbreak monkey. So, we're always sick in this house, but I understand colds are hard, and even though we have sunshine here, it's not exactly the easiest thing in the world. So, let's get right to the news of the day. Can I do the da-da-da thing?
Do the da-da-da.
Da-da-da! Our Pierre LeBrun reported that the Kings are open to dealing Alec Martinez. And according to the story, which is on The Athletic, an Eastern Conference team executive suggested as a potential return for Martinez, second and a prospect. Obes, what do you think about the Kings potentially trading Alec Martinez this year and pulling a Jake Muzzin, doing essentially what the Kings did last year of trading a guy with term left on his deal? Because he's got 1 year left at $4
million. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to toot my own horn here or toot our horns on Point Breakaway here, but I believe that's what we came up with last week when we were talking about, you know, bold predictions and trades. I believe, you know, Alec's name came up, and I think you were saying you could maybe get a first round for him, and I think we were both just kind of agreed that would be like a, you know, a first rounder may be a stretch, but a second rounder and a prospect would be a great deal for the Kings. And listen, this kid, you know, he's coming off injury. I believe it was his wrist, right, Coop? Is that what he hurt?
Yeah, he had his wrist slashed by a skate, which is kind of gross, but ended up not being nearly as bad as what anyone thought it would be.
Yeah, so he's coming back here with some time before the, you know, he's got the All-Star break coming up, and then obviously the deadline right around the corner. So he's an established guy, Stanley Cup champion, scored the game-winning goal to clinch the Stanley Cup for the Kings. And just a solid defenseman. Any team that's you know, knocking on the door or that's already in the playoffs would love to add his depth and leadership. And I think a second rounder to prospect would be a great deal for the Kings.
So this is what Pierre said in his story. I don't want to give away too much because, obviously, The Athletic, we are behind a paywall for a reason. But he said, while it may be too early to identify teams of interest, I do wonder about Carolina. Carolina is interesting. Probably need some help on D. There are some other teams that I feel like are just always needing help on D. Colorado, Winnipeg with the Dustin Byfuglien situation. Whenever you mention help on D, for whatever reason, Toronto's name just always seems to pop up, even though I don't think they'd be in on this one just because I think they've solidified their D pretty well. But overall, I think dealing Martinez is a smart move just because you have a situation with a player here that has term. And I think whenever you're trading a guy with term, you can get a better return especially if you don't think you're going to be very good next season. Am I right on that, Obes?
Yeah, I think when it comes to term coupon, and we've talked about this before, if it's good term and it's a good contract, then absolutely it helps. Where, you know, sometimes in other cases, if a guy has, you know, two or three years left, at some term that's maybe a little bit more than he's willing to, or maybe more than he should be making, or he's near the end of his career or whatever, I think that hampers a trade sometimes. But in this situation, when you got a guy with, you know, 1 year left at $4 million, like you said, which is, you know, about right for him, I think it makes it a lot easier for the Kings to find a home for him. And, you know, Toronto was the one team that I thought right away when you brought up the Eastern Conference. You know, I don't love their back end. I think he would slide in there and help out tremendously. But also, any team in the Eastern Conference or Western Conference would love to plug this guy in and help their depth on defense.
What do you like about Alec Martinez's game?
You know what? When he first came in the league and I first started playing against him, I don't want to say I thought he was overrated because it's probably not the right word, but I just didn't. He never really was flashy or really, you know, did anything that jumped out on a night-to-night basis. But then as his career went on and you kind of watched him, and then obviously you watched him in his playoff runs and, you know, just how steady he is. You know, he doesn't do anything like maybe over spectacular, but, you know, he can play the power play. He can kill penalties. He can play against the top two lines. He's just solid. And as a defenseman in the NHL, when you can just be called solid night in and night out, that's, you know, maybe the best call you can get sometimes. So for a team that's in the playoffs and maybe needs a little veteran experience, you know, he's almost the perfect fit.
Let's shit on Fancy Stats a little bit. 206 blocks in 2017-18. A guy who, even though doesn't look like the type of guy who will block shots, like just with the way his game plays, he gets in front of the puck a lot, and he tries to stop guys, or basically prevent pucks from getting to the goaltender. But I think he does it in a really good way where he doesn't alter the trajectory of a shot.
That's him in a nutshell. Like, you never really think that he's like, oh, a big shot blocker. And then you throw out those stats. You're like, oh, yeah, he finds a way to get in the shooting lanes. If it's a hit your stick or skate or shin pad, it doesn't really matter as long as, you know, it doesn't get through the net. And, you know, that's just his game, you know, overall for me. You probably don't leave the rink being like, wow, that Martinez was sick tonight. But then you look in the score sheet and he had, you know, five or six blocks, a couple hits, plus two, maybe picked up an assist. Like, that's just kind of how he is. He's not the most flashy guy out there, but he's solid. He competes. And like we've said before, he's a Stanley Cup champion. Anytime you can add a Stanley Cup champion to your dressing room, I know GMs love that.
Well, one thing I like about him, too, is the way he handles the point, essentially, when he has the puck there. He's really savvy on there. I mean, he'll look guys off and then just throw some sick, like, cross-eye sauce for a one-timer. When the team is playing well and they have guys who can score on one-timers, obviously that's not really the case right now. But I remember a couple of years ago when I covered them, I think it was 2017-18, I was around the team a lot. He really did quite well on the power play as far as power play points, which was interesting to me because I was just like, why is Alec Martinez, you know, why are his power play numbers so good? But I mean, really, it's just because he's just a very smooth operator on the point. It's almost kind of like a poor man's, well, I don't want to say poor. I mean, that's just wrong on his case. But he's very similar to Marc-Edouard Vlasic, I think, in regards to how he handles that type of stuff.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good comparison. You know, both left shots, similar builds, kind of skate the same way. And both really good defensemen, just not, you know, the flashiest guys, but can both play the power play. And you know, you're right about Martinez. He can walk the line nicely on the power play. He keeps it simple. He moves it to the outside. He gets it back. He puts it on net. You know, he makes it. When I used to play against him and watch him on the power play, he just makes a simple play. Like if you give it back to the half wall guy attacks, gives it back to him, he puts it on net. And a lot of times when you play the power play, you want to do these fancy things and these, you know, spinoramas and backhand sauces. And a lot of the times it's just get to the middle, pound the puck, give it back to the half wall guy. And he keeps it pretty simple, and like you said, when the time is there, he can make the right play.
Yeah, in 2017-18, 9 power play assists, ranked 4th on the Kings. So just one behind Jake Muzzin for 3rd. Jake Muzzin, who obviously a lot of people really like his game and think he's fantastic. So overall, I think it's a good move. I think trading him would make sense for the Kings. It would suck to see him go just because I think he's a true pro and he's someone that could do a, you know, does a lot there and has done a lot there and won a Stanley Cup for them and beat the Chicago Blackhawks in a conference final, but still, you know, you when you're in a rebuild and you don't really see yourself being competitive in a year, you got to try to get something for guys who could basically yield something. And while we were in the middle of talking about him, I messaged an NHL executive I know, and the NHL executive said, second round pick probably.
Yeah, tell your NHL executive we already came up with that coup. Say Point Breakaway. We came up with that last week, bro.
We came up with that.
You came up with a good point, and you know, you said it's gonna suck trading him, and you know, I wanted to talk about this. Is all these trades that are gonna about to happen for the Kings, you know, they're gonna suck for everybody involved. The management, the players, the fans. And the reason I said that is because they've had such success, and you know, they won their two Stanley Cups, and all these guys have been there for such a long time, and it's a great place to live, a great place to play. And, you know, even when you had Stoli on here and he talked about, you know, the family mentality they have and you know, playing against them, you saw that. So I feel bad for Rob Blake. It's part of the job that sucks. But all these trades, if it's Kyle Clifford or Trevor Lewis or Jeff Carter gets traded, you know, it's going to be tough for these guys because they've been together for a long time, had so much success, and everyone in the organization loves them. So it's the shitty part of the business, but you know, that's why they pay Blakey the big bucks.
You know, one thing about that too that I was thinking about is when we say when we talk about guys who are going to get traded, it's not like we're saying this in the sense of this guy isn't good, so he should get traded. It's that he just doesn't fit on this team anymore. And I think that's always something that I think gets lost, and I hope players understand that when we say that, in the sense of it's obviously nothing personal. It's just a matter of the way the direction the team is going. The player just doesn't fit there anymore, but could fit really well in another team because they still have skills. And I'm just curious your thoughts on that, just as a former player, Obi, like if you'd hear your name in trade rumors, or there were guys whose names were in trade rumors. I mean, we talked about that. How do they approach that? How do they think about that? Do they doubt themselves at all? Or do they understand that this is just the fit with where they are is just not there anymore?
Yeah, it's you know, if you're in the Kings locker room and you're a veteran guy, like these guys were talking about, and you know, they realize where the organization's heading. It's just part of the business that sucks. I mean, you know, there's different situations where you get traded from a bad team and you go to a team that's knocking on the door to win a Stanley Cup, then you're excited. And, you know, then there's other guys that are just getting traded for picks and here and that. And there's nothing easy about trades. I mean, I got traded a ton. I was a suitcase. You know, it's like every other year I was getting traded or whatever. And, you know, being a single guy for me, it was easy. I pack up my suitcase and off I go into a new city. But you know, when you have a family and kids, and you know, obviously your wife has made friends with the other wives, and your kids are friends with their kids, and your kids are in school, you know, people don't realize it's the stressful side of the business. And yeah, these guys make tons of money, have great lifestyles, but when you get traded and you got to be on a plane in 3 or 4 hours and you got to leave your wife and kids behind, you know, it's hard for these guys. And you know, we talk about it a lot and it's part of the game, but at the same time they're human beings, and it's definitely a stressful time.
Well, and yeah, I mean, it is an incredibly stressful time overall, and it does suck. And I think you see a lot of players end up playing much better after the trade deadline, and there's a clear and obvious reason why. And but yeah, it's a very hard part of the business. There's no question about that. But it's also one that generates lots of fan interest because, excuse me, trades just a lot of people like hearing about them. And one thing I always like doing is imagining a player in another jersey. I just always think that looks super interesting and super fascinating. And I always love it when graphics people do that. So if you're a graphics person and you listen, keep doing that because it's really interesting. So now we sort of move on a little bit. There's one quick thing I wanted to talk about with the Kings. And a guy whose name had been on the block, or I guess as had, a guy whose name had been mentioned in trade rumors in the past, has either A, upped his value, or B, solidified himself with the Kings, and that's Adrian Kempe, who our Lisa Dillman pointed out has 10 points in his last 16 games. He's on a line with Michael Amadio and Austin Wagner. Obi, you compared him to Pavel Datsyuk earlier in the year.
Woo, that might have been a bad call, Coop. Was I drinking the night before that one? I might have been drinking the night before that podcast.
Potentially. But he had been healthy scratched. And then he's sort of figured it out. And Todd McClellan, head coach, said there was a phase at the beginning of the year where we wondered if he would fit what he was doing. Now you can't get enough of him. Credit to him for sticking with it. His tenacity, his speed, his skill set is coming out night after night. We're lucky to have him right now. He seems comfortable on the wing, comfortable on that line. I really think he's an alpha on that line and takes charge. Maybe that's what he needed. I always thought he profiled better as a center. Clearly I was wrong. What do you think about his game?
Kempe, finally, Kempe, finally you found your game for the boys. Yeah, man, listen, he was the guy at the start of the year, Coop, when we did our, you know, little Point Breakaway preview that I had highlighted as a guy that, you know, had to take that next step. And obviously Todd, when he came in, he felt the same way. And at the start of the season when Kempe was struggling and Todd was trying to give him a little wake-up call here, I think he put him in the press box one night. And, you know, then all the people start – rumors start flying. He's going to get traded, blah, 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 this and that. And sometimes when a new coach comes in and you got to learn the system and, you know, it takes guys longer than other guys to get into the system. And now he's found his game. And, you know, like you said, I was with you, Coop. I thought he was going to be a centerman. But, hey, you know, he's found a little place in the wing. He's playing good hockey. If I'm Rob Blake, I'm not trading that kid at all. I think he has so much potential and he's just scratching the surface and he's starting to play well, thank God, because he was one of the guys I had on my list that had to have a good year for the Kings to win some more hockey games.
Is it just one of those things where a guy has so much skill, he just, you know, he's going to put it together at some point? Because I've always, it's one thing to have skill but no work ethic, but he has skill and work ethic and you could tell he was really working on it. Like, really working hard. And finally, I think that he probably, I mean, I don't know this for certain, but I assume he was working with the coaching staff to figure out what his best role was. He's a very diligent guy and seems to really care about the game and care about his role. And, I mean, my assumption is that they just all kind of got together and were like, this is what makes the most sense. And it ended up making the most sense.
Yeah, I mean, you never know what's going on in a locker room. And obviously, I think, you know, Todd communicates very well with his players. You see the way he handles himself in the media. He's fairly blunt. He tells you what he's thinking. And I think he's the same with his guys behind closed doors. And it was no secret that Kempe was not playing the way he wanted him to. And he gave him some tough love early and said, hey, watch up top for a night. And, you know, that's the biggest wake-up call for any player is when you come in the morning and your jersey's not there, your name's not on the board, and you got to go through morning skate, and then you got to stay out there later and get bag skated with you and the assistant coach, and all the boys are going to pregame, and you got to, you know, it really stings when you're not in the lineup. So basically what I'm saying was I think that was a little bit of a wake-up call for him. You know, the NHL is a privilege. You got to work hard every night, and I think for him it's just consistency. And I know I use that word a lot, Coop, but, you know, when it comes to being an NHL player, the more consistent you can be night in, night out, and your coach knows you're going to play, you know, you don't have to be the best player in the world every single night, but you got to be consistently good, reliable, and, you know, for Kempe, you got to put some points on the board, and he's playing better, and it's good for the Kings, and it's good for him.
Let's talk about consistency, because the Ducks have been consistently bad, basically, for a long time.
Poor Ducks.
Yeah, I know, your Ducks, also.
My Ducks. The Kings are ahead of them now in the standings, too, so maybe we should have a little side bet on that, Coop. Who finishes higher, the Kings or Ducks? Maybe we'll bet dinner or something on that.
Man.
But anyways. The battle of the basement dwellers, Coop.
Well, dinner at Solani's, or if I win, you get to babysit for one night. You don't want
to do that to your poor kid, fella.
Yeah, be traumatized for life.
Yeah. Right.
So this is from Eric Stevens' story over the weekend after the Ducks lost to the Chicago Blackhawks. The Ducks are to the point where they're circling the drain. Losses have piled up for a long while. 3 straight and 6-7 games. 1 win in regulation over their last 17. No stretch of back-to-back wins since November 1st. A remarkably bad span of 30 contests. This is a quote from Dallas Eakins. Actually, I'm going to go through a few quotes here. I'm going to go through quote by quote, and you're going to tell me what you think about each of them, okay? We're just not good enough yet to go out and have one off shift, Eakins said. We have to be competitive. Compete, compete, compete. Every single shift. To a man, if we're going to have any kind of success or be in the game. That's the end of the quote.
Yeah. No, I'm following along with you here. Yeah, that's just Dally basically saying, and this is another thing, Coop, when you're in a rebuild and, you know, you got these young kids and you don't have as much skill as other teams, you know, listen, I don't want to say, you know, but let's use the Dallas Stars, for example, or who's Colorado Avalanche. There could be nights where, you know, maybe they're not the hardest working team out there, but, you know, they get a few power play goals from McKinnon or Landeskog or whatever, and you win the hockey game. When you're a young team and you don't have that skill and you don't have guys like McKinnon and Landeskog and Ratanen, these guys that can put the puck in with one shot, you have to continue to grind. So what Dally's saying there is, we're not good enough to take shifts off. Is it hard to compete every single night as hard as you can? Absolutely. But, you know, when you're in the position of the Ducks and you're these young kids that are getting these opportunities that, quite frankly, they probably don't deserve yet, you better be working hard every fucking shift. And Dally's just saying, boys, we're not nearly good enough for you guys to think and go out there and give 95%. Is it hard to give 100%? 100%? Yeah, it is hard. But at this point, if you want to win hockey games or even compete, you got to work hard every single shift. And it sucks because you don't have a lot of skill right now, but that's the way it goes.
Here's the next one. To come out like that in the second period and not be ready to compete for every inch on the ice and give up an inch almost every shift, that's what you're going to get, Eakin said about the Ducks basically allowing the Blackhawks to roll them in the second period. That's what you get. You give an inch in this league, they will shove it where the sun doesn't shine. That's just the way it goes.
That's a great Dallas Eakins line there. He's a funny guy. I love Dally. Yeah, it's just the same thing. He's just trying to preach these guys, like, you know, listen, they're in a tough stretch, and we've talked about this before, Coop. Losing in the NHL, you know, it sucks. Even if you're playing in a market like Orange County where, you know, the media is not as big as it would be in, you know, in the East Coast or in Canada, it's still, you come in, you have to answer the same questions about losing and day in and day out, and you go out and practice, and everyone's miserable. And, you know, the one good thing about playing in Anaheim is at least when you get outside, it's sunny, you can go to the beach and kind of get away from the game. But, you know, Dally's just saying, listen, we're not fucking nearly good enough to not go out there and compete. And like he said, you take one shift off in the NHL and Patty Kane gets the puck in the neutral zone. He's got a little bit of room. Bad things happen. So just the same kind of thing. He's just trying to preach these young kids that, you know, the only chance we have is to be the hardest working team night in and night out.
I'm in a shitty mood right now, the coach said. I don't see much positive.
Yeah, I mean, poor Dally right now. It's, you know, he probably just went for a long bike ride after this interview. He probably just rode his bike back home 30 miles or whatever he does.
I don't know. It was in Chicago, so that would be a long-ass bike ride.
So he probably just jumped on the stationary bike then. And
well, they play in St. Louis next, so they
rode for an hour and 30 minutes or something, or whenever he got to the hotel. Basically, what I'm saying is, that's his, like, way to get away from the game, is he loves, you know, cycling and all that stuff. So, yeah, he's, you know, when he took the job, I never talked to him, but I'm sure he knew that it was going to be, you know, there's going to be some growing pains, and they're going through it right now. And even when you're not expected to win through the media or whatever, you're still a head coach. You still have so much pride, and you believe that you're preparing your team in the right way, that you're giving them an opportunity to win hockey games. And you know, like I've said about Dally, he's a very intelligent guy, super, super cool dude, and very up at the times, and takes pride in his job. And, you know, when you prepare your hockey club and they come out and play that way, you take it personally. And right now it just seems to me from those quotes that, you know, Dally's taking it personal. He's a little bit embarrassed and a little bit pissed off, and just trying to wake the boys up a bit and get them playing, obviously, a little bit harder.
So, yeah, about that, how much do – I mean, I think we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but, like, players and coaches in the media, how much do players listen to this? Because I feel like a coach would tell a player in the locker room before he'd go out and actually speak to the media about this.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. It all depends on the market you're in. Like, I think in Orange County and maybe LA, I think you can get away from, you know, unless you want to go find, you know, unless you're looking into the media to, unless you're going on Twitter or whatever to find what they're saying. If you're just like, being a player, you leave it at the rink. I think you can kind of get away from it here. Now, if you're playing in Canada, you know, there's no way to get away from it. You turn the TV on, it's all over the TV, whatever. Everywhere you go, it's everywhere. But I think in this market, if you're a player that's kind of struggling and you want to get away from the game, I think you can avoid the media down here. But at the same time, you know, a lot of players now with social media, you can't get away from it as easily. So I'm sure they're hearing what Dallas is saying. And I know one thing about Dallas Eakins, if he's saying it in the media, he's definitely saying it to the boys behind closed doors as well. He's a very upfront guy. Players love him, but at the same time, when you're playing bad and you piss him off, he's going to let you know.
So one thing about that that I find super interesting when you mention this is, you know, there are certain just coaches where they'll rip someone in the media And like, as media members, we're like, oh my God, you ripped this person. The media is a big deal. We went off. And, but really, players don't give a shit. But as you said, like, I feel like with Dallas Eakins, players want to play for him so badly and do a good job for him that I think they actually care about this type of stuff. I think they actually legitimately hear it and they're like, oh shit, like, we really got to pick it up. And we'll see how the Ducks do pick it up. I mean, at the end of the day, they're really not as talented as other teams right now that they're playing against, but I do think that what Dallas Eakins wants today in St. Louis, it's a really good Blues team, is just better effort overall. I think that's what he's going for.
Yeah, and this is the NHL in a nutshell. You know, you're struggling. You go in to play in Chicago, which is, you know, they don't have the same team they used to years ago, but it's still a great building to play in, good fans. You lose there, and then you jump on the plane. You had to, you know, St. Louis to play the defending Stanley Cup champs. You're like, it's just never ending. When you're on a bad team, it just seems like it's never ending. And basically what I'm saying is the Ducks could go into St. Louis and work as hard as they want, and chances are they're probably not going to win the hockey game. But they should show Daly that they can bounce back. And I think that's all he probably wants, is to show that you can bounce back, show that you're a little pissed off, show some emotion, and don't just accept losing, even when you're going in to play the defending Stanley Cup champs.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that point. And we'll see how they play and how they not just respond in that game, but in other games, because you really, really do need to basically have a situation where you just got to do it. I mean, you just really need a little bit more effort. And speaking of St. Louis, the Ducks do play the Blues tonight, and I think that you should check out the podcast We Went Blues with Jeremy Rutherford and Barrett Jackman. Excellent podcast. We'll give you a wonderful point of view on the other side. So highly recommend listening to that after you finish listening to Point Breakaway. More stuff I kind of wanted to get to, and this just, there has been some awkwardness. There's always some awkwardness in the NHL that I find super interesting. And I don't know, I just find things that could be portrayed as awkward to be interesting. And Obi, there's one thing I want to get your take on. Is the Corey Perry salute before the game against the Dallas Stars. Not the one during the game, but the one before the game where they brought him in. They showed a video of essentially him accepting a bottle of wine, the Ducks saluting him for playing 1,000 games. And look, he's done a lot for this franchise. There's no question about that. They had the name, I think they had his name or number on a crest behind him, basically, Ducks crest. Talking about all the contributions he made and everything. But there were some people there that I just thought were interesting. One were the ownership group, the Samwellies, who, I mean, look, like at the end of the day, like all these people okayed Corey Perry's previous contract, made a lot of money because of them. And the other was Bob Murray. Not only did these people okay his contract, they also okayed the decision to buy him out. Is that a little awkward at all, or does everyone just realize it's a business and they move on?
Yeah, no, when it comes to the buyout thing, I don't think it was personal. I just think Pears probably knew at this particular moment where the Ducks were and how much money he was making that it made more sense for them to buy him out. And I'm sure he was a little bit, you know, still pissed off that after all he did for the team and, you know, winning a Stanley Cup and scoring 50 and, you know, his number 10 will be hanging in the Honda Center eventually, so... I just thought it was cool that they still did all this stuff for him. I remember we did a little thing for him, and I didn't even think that he would still show up and they would do all this stuff for him. So that was awesome that even though he wasn't playing, they still gave him the return he deserved, and Getzy gave him a nice bottle of wine, and it was just great. I mean, people in Anaheim, like we said, they love Pears so much, and I know he wanted to play in the game, but it was still cool that they gave him the return he deserved.
It was more along the lines of, though, like, Bob Murray and the Samwellies being there, or at least Murph being there. I don't know. Like, I don't know what their relationship was, but if essentially I went to a room where I was already somewhere else and the boss that fired me was there, wouldn't that feel a little weird? Or is hockey just different in that everyone's friends with each other and they just get it?
Well, I know for sure that, you know, Murph and Pears have, you know, Murph's known Corey since he was 18 years old. You know, he's seen Corey, you know, turn from a young man into a grown man and have a family and a kid and won a Stanley Cup with them. So I'm sure the whole process of when it was coming to buy Pears out, it wasn't like Pears just woke up one morning and like was like, oh, a message from Bob Murray, hey, I'm buying you out. I'm sure there were some meetings. I'm sure they talked face to face. Bob probably listened to what Pears had to say, and then eventually they came to the decision that, you know, it was time for both sides to move on. I think it was better for Corey Perry in general. Like, you know, he gets bought out, you know, and he signs a little 1-year deal with Dallas. He can go in there and play a, you know, a different role than he played with the Ducks, and there's not as much pressure, And I think they probably, I'm not 100% sure, Coop, but I would say they talked a lot before he actually bought him out. So I would say there's probably no hard feelings between Corey Perry and Bob Murray.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It was just sort of, it looked, I guess, if you didn't know much about what goes on behind the scenes in hockey, optically it looked a little off, but ultimately it made sense. And that's why I was curious to get your opinion on that, because you played there and you understand. And obviously watching Corey Perry cry, and it was emotional. I mean, you can tell, despite the rough exterior, how much he cares. And that was super interesting to me, and I thought super cool just in general.
Yeah, I mean, he totally cares. And, you know, he was drafted when he was 17 years old, and from then on was a Duck, and tons of good memories, met so many cool people here, and was the face of the franchise. And like I said, his number 10 will be hanging up in the Honda Center someday, and I'm sure if he ever wants a job with the Ducks or whatever, there'll be one waiting for him. And it's part of the business that sucks, but he had an unbelievable run here with the Ducks and fan favorite forever. And, you know, Corey Perry has a good life, so he'll be just fine.
Yeah, no, he'll be back in Orange County, probably living, raising his kids, and because who wouldn't want to live out here? One last quick question for you before we head out. So we talked about Dallas Eakins biking to St. Louis. All-star games going in St. Louis. A lot of guys seeming to have or come up with the old hamstring problem. It's a lot of guys who seem to be pulling out of this game. So curious, have you ever been in a situation where just a guy just didn't want to go to a certain game? Because I feel like you've had some really, a really good, the NHL's had a really good stretch of locations with Nashville, LA, Tampa, and San Jose. Previously was Columbus. I remember covering that game and I was just like, wow, like every, like, I remember like Evgeny Malkin pulling out like the night before the weekend, and just a million different things going on where like everybody was pulling out of that game. And Brian Elliott had to be like basically airlifted from Turks and Caicos to like come in and play goal. But, you know, what's your take on this? And does the NHL just need to make the All-Star game a destination to avoid stuff like this from happening?
Yes, the boys aren't the boys aren't showing St. Louis the love, are they? It's not like they're, like you said, LA or Nashville or Tampa. You know, it is what it is. These guys, they play so many minutes throughout the course of the season. If they've been to the All-Star game, you know, a few times, then obviously St. Louis isn't that appealing to them. And I guess right now they have the right to not go, and they can't, what, they get suspended for one game. So if you talk to your coach and you run it by him and he says he's okay with it, then I get it. But, you know, from a guy who never was even sniffing an All-Star game, if I ever got the opportunity, I wouldn't care if it was in St. Louis, Columbus, Carolina, whatever, Edmonton. I would go anywhere to play in the All-Star game. But, you know, for these guys that have done it over and over again, and maybe they want some rest. You never know how these guys' bodies feel either. Like, you know, guys, sometimes these All-Stars, they pull out and people give them a hard time, but, you know, maybe they have, like, maybe their groin's a little sore, their back's a little tight. We don't know what's going on with them on a personal level, but, you know, St. Louis has very passionate hockey fans, and yeah, it's not the greatest city in the world, but it's not the worst either, and I think anytime you're an All-Star, you should definitely try to honor it.
Make it like the Pro Bowl, or used to be, or whatever the Pro Bowl does. I don't even know what it does anymore, but like put it in Hawaii. Just do that. Just have guys do that. Make it like a week long.
That'll get the boys. That'll get the boys to play.
Why not, man? All right, well, that's it for this episode of Point Breakaway. Please don't forget to rate and subscribe to us on Apple. If you click on the show URL, theathletic.com/pointbreakaway, you'll get 40% off your subscription to The Athletic, and you'll be able to hear bonus subscriber-only edition of Point Breakaway each week, too. So, Obes, that was fun. Enjoy talking to you, as always, and we'll be back later in the week.
Yep, thanks, Drew. Appreciate it, buddy.